Welcome to the Valenta Insider Series podcast. I'm Kishore Siva, and today we are delighted to welcome the Astral Consulting Group and their co-founders, Chris Andressi and Alfonso Albuquerque. In today's session, we're going to be talking with Chris and Alfonso about the data-driven revolution. Specifically, why are data and analytics so critical to businesses, and why must businesses of all sizes ensure that they have robust data and robust analytics in order to make the right decisions? Before we get started, just a reminder of who we are. Valenta's mission is to help businesses be more efficient in the way that they operate. And we help companies of all sizes with improving their processes, automating their processes, and staff augmentation. And through those core services, we work with companies across multiple industries around the world. If you need any help with any of these services, please visit our website at us.valenta.io. The Valenta Insider podcast series is our recurring series on topics that we believe and we've heard that our business clients and companies of all sizes will find important to their specific needs. And we hope that you'll download and subscribe to our Valenta Insider Series podcast. With that said, let's go to our conversation with Chris and Alfonso.
I wanted to do first is really just learn a little bit about both of you and your backgrounds. And I was going to ask if each of you could talk a little bit about your backgrounds prior to Astral, and then we'll talk about Astral. So, Chris?
So before ACG, I was working at PricewaterhouseCoopers, aka PwC, up in New York City. So I was living in New Jersey across the Hudson, commuting in across the PATH train into the city to actually go to work. And I was doing technology consulting there. So working with a company called Oracle to bring companies' databases from on-premises, hard servers, actual computers, up into the cloud. And that really gave me my first taste and first foray into digital transformation and cloud and analytics. And prior to that, I attended Lehigh University as part of the Integrated Business and Engineering Honors Program, where I got my first taste of entrepreneurship. And there we actually got to do a whole host of workshops where we would get a team, we'd come up with a novel product, come up with the value prop, the financials, and we'd go out and pitch it to a group of angel investors. And so that really I credit as planting the seed for entrepreneurship. And after COVID, and I'm sure we'll get into this in a minute, is really what sparked that to actually put that into action and start a company for ourselves.
Terrific. Excellent background, Chris. And Alfonso, if we could ask you to share your background.
Of course. And it's kind of funny. Myself and Chris actually both met at Lehigh University. Mm-hmm. We were both in the same fraternity and in the same program that he mentioned, the Integrated Business and Engineering program. So I really had a lot of entrepreneurship kind of workshops there and was able to learn a lot. And like you mentioned, definitely planted the seed for us. And then after school, I was working at, well, I had two roles professionally. I was working at Air Products and Chemicals as an engineer. And that's kind of where I got my first taste of data. I was working with a lot of live data feeds for their hydrogen fueling station. And then from there, went to corporate finance. I also have a degree in finance, so I was able to make the move to Ernst & Young. I was also living in Hoboken, commuting to New York. Had that exposure to corporate finance before the pandemic hit. And, you know, myself and Chris kind of got together and, you know, realized maybe it's the time to make the leap into entrepreneurship just because of, we saw this huge digital shift happening and felt like it was the right time.
No, terrific. Terrific. So I think both of you are part of a large growing community of people also that have made the move from New York down to the Carolinas, correct?
We are. And it's not just New York. It's funny. Somebody told me, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, that California has lost 13% of its population in 2 months. And I'd imagine a good chunk of that's coming to the Triangle, believe it or not, from Texas, from up north. So certainly a big inflow.
It's kind of crazy because we go out and we meet a lot of individuals, and a lot of the people that we meet are actually not from North Carolina. Everybody's coming down from either the West Coast or up north.
It's funny. I actually talked to someone that attended a Charlotte, a Carolina Panthers game, and said that there were far more fans of the visiting team there, which was one of the Northeast teams, than there were of actually home fans. So that's definitely definitely a trend. So let's talk a little bit about Astral. So, and you started to talk a little bit about this in your introductions, but could you tell us a little bit about how you started ACS and a little bit more about the company?
Sure. So like we said, it was really the IB program at Lehigh and one of our professors, Pat Costa, so shout out to Pat Costa, that really planted a seed. And then we find ourselves working virtually, working from home on our laptops. Me personally saw myself getting potentially a little bit pigeonholed into more of a technical role that involved a lot of coding, a lot of database administration, you know, things that I was interested in. But I also saw myself doing grander things in some sense, something that allowed me to be a little bit more creative, give me that outlet. You know, I've always been a musician. I used to make videos and you know, I always had kind of that creative bend. So that was a part of it. And so when the pandemic really hit, we kind of got together with ourselves and said, hey, what are we good at? What can we do? And we didn't really think of it as a full business at first, more of kind of that side hustle of saying, okay, we've heard about Fiverr.com. We've heard about Freelancer.com, Upwork. You know, there's probably five of them. And we got on those websites and started selling our services under the name Astral Consulting as financial modeling for startups and companies looking to actually raise capital. And during that same time, we started getting a lot of clients through those sources, getting some experience. And then what also happened was we started reaching out to everybody in that Lehigh alumni network. And it's a fantastic, tight-knit group. And I think partially credited to the fact that it's only 5,000 students there. So we really do stick together. And a lot of them, and one individual in particular named Alan Frank, was actually the founder of another consulting group in the digital transformation space back in the dot-com boom era. Mm-hmm. And this was a company he took from the ground to IPO in a couple of years in the midst of that boom. And he was focused on analytics and some of what we're doing now way before its time, actually before some of this stuff was even possible. But what he really did was get our minds around this idea of where the wave really was, which I don't think was around financial modeling as much as it gave us some experience of trying to run a business, but around data and analytics and something that's going to allow businesses to become more competitive in this modern world where we find ourselves in a greater degree of change than ever before, faster innovation. We see supply chain constrictions. Just leaders are just met with this a massive amount of information that could seem insurmountable. And data and analytics is really that tool that allows you to make sense of that. So that's really what allowed us to start saying we're a data analytics consulting company. And what does that mean? What is the branding like? And we really just dove at first several months after starting Astral as that financial services company. And, you know, we haven't really looked back since.
So, yeah, sorry, go ahead, Alfonso.
Yeah, and even early on, when we were really focused on financial modeling, we had some of our clients really, you know, demand, or not demand, but really ask for some of these dashboards or more types of analytics rather than just things in Excel. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kind of experienced it from firsthand, the need for data and analytics in some of these companies.
You know, so data and analytics are definitely, they go hand in hand. But they're obviously not the exact same thing, right? They're two kind of distinct disciplines in some respects. Could you talk a little bit about how you define the word data, and then how is that different from analytics?
Right. And really good point, Kishore. And, you know, I think a lot of people sometimes think of data analytics as this one single thing. And that's why we do have a distinction. We say we're a data and analytics consulting right. firm. And really, you know, data, it's a buzzword now. It's a fancy term, but really all it is it's facts about something, right? You know, the height of the plant on my balcony over here is a piece of data. Age is data, financial information, it's all data. And data in and of itself is not particularly useful unless maybe you just love collecting facts about the size of plants and things of that nature, but it's not necessarily inherently helpful. And that's where analytics comes in. So in analytics, I would define is just the broad base of methodologies, tools, techniques to take that data, those facts, and convert them into meaningful information, meaningful insights that are then going to allow you to make a better decision. So at the end of the day, what we're all about is improving decision-making within our organization, our client organizations.
Now, that's such an important distinction. And you know, I guess that leads to a question, which is around companies sometimes don't have the best data infrastructure or and if, and perhaps don't think about analytics. What are some mistakes or horror stories that you've seen where companies haven't prioritized data and analytics?
Well, there's many, and I'll probably have some of Joe Alfonso will come up with more, and there'll be many more that we didn't mention. But, you know, one of the biggest ones is what we call silos or islands of data. And we see this across the board, whether it's a $5 billion revenue client of ours or someone who's doing 50 million, the issue still abounds just in varying degrees. And what we mean by islands or silos are really just fragmented data stores. And that can be something as simple as an MS Access database or even an Excel spreadsheet. And it could be something like an Oracle ERP or a financial planning tool. But the real point is that these systems do not communicate well with one another. They may be very good in what they're designed to do, and they may be good within a specific function. Maybe finance is using this Oracle tool and it's working for them. Sales is using the CRM and it's working for them. But now we find ourselves in this era where executives are increasingly making cross-functional decisions. These big strategic decisions they're making aren't just about finance. They're not just about marketing or sales. They require input from all these functions. And in this data-driven world, that means we need information. We need data from all these functions. And so you begin to see why it's such an issue that we have these fragmented platforms that don't speak well to one another. And it leads to inefficiencies, lower quality decisions, and a bloated budget around trying to, you know, patch these solutions, more of a duct tape approach, rather than we try to do, which is start with a holistic strategy to incrementally adjust these solutions, address these problems, and really, really just take that comprehensive approach. But I think we'll get more into that.
Yeah, and exactly like Chris mentioned, these data silos are ultimately hurting collaboration among the enterprise, not just even at the executive level, but even just, you know, sales departments being linked with marketing departments or the finance teams. The data silos are really keeping them from improving their efficiencies and improving collaboration among those different teams. And then there's a lot of different reasons why these data silos happen. And ultimately, recently, one of those reasons is there's been a lot of M&As going on. And when a company acquires another company, they get all of their systems and now they're not integrated. And this is typically, it's happening a lot in manufacturing companies just because of how they're currently growing at the moment. But yeah, those data silos can definitely hurt the efficiencies in an organization.
So with that in mind, what should a business owner be thinking about if they decide, you know what, I need to improve my data infrastructure and really think about this differently? What should they be considering before they take any further steps?
That's a great question. And it really starts with why. Why do I need to improve my data infrastructure? Because I think a lot of companies, they recognize their deficiencies in this department, but sometimes they just start throwing resources at a big consulting company or at these off-the-shelf products that claim to be able to fix these issues. But a lot of times they're wasting time and money in an era where it's so critical to conserve those resources when they don't really know why. And so our approach is to start with your key business objectives, whether that be introducing a new product to the market, whether that be increasing prices due to all the supply chain constrictions and the inflationary environment we find ourselves in. Whatever it is, find those priorities and then figure out what are those high profile, high impact questions that you're asking yourself day to day, month to month, week to week. From there, those questions naturally beget more questions. So if we're asking, are we making money? Well, then that question is naturally going to break down into, okay, which customer segments are more profitable than others? Which products are doing better than others? Eventually, we work our way down to finding the data sources that will actually allow us to answer those questions. So we're almost working backwards from the why, the reason why we need good data, all the way back to the data sources. And then when we know what data we need, that's when we can take an incremental approach and say, okay, which data sources do we need to begin to consolidate? Maybe we need to build what we call a single source of truth on top of those platforms so we can have harmonized data. But this works a lot better than saying we need to fix our entire data infrastructure, especially if you're a $10 billion company where that's a multi-billion dollar, multi-year initiative. But if I start with something that's high impact, high priority, I could start making changes in months rather than years. So just for those reasons, we really see that starting with why is really, really critical to actually adapting your data infrastructure in a very pragmatic way.
So what? Oh, go ahead, Alfonso.
No, if I guess I can add to that as well a little bit. It's also kind of the case. It's not an if, but more like a when, because everybody's going to have to kind of start asking these questions, starting with the why. Because if you don't, in the next 20 years, your competitors are going to take over. So it's kind of, you know, all of this that you're doing, laying that structure and kind of answering some of these questions that you have, will eventually, at the end of the day, give you that competitive advantage.
Terrific. So as you think about the why, and as you think through some of these considerations, what's the point at which it makes sense to bring in an external firm like an Astral to kind of help improve data and analytics?
Great question. And it really depends where you are. But where I see a lot of value, and I am biased, but where I see a lot of value in bringing in that external firm is really wrapping your head around the strategy and that roadmap to actually advancing data analytics within your company. Because a lot of times you get a bit of a paralysis by analysis situation where, do I start with finance? Do I start with marketing? Do I start in sales? These issues abound across all the functions. So by bringing in teams who actually have that expertise and they've seen case after case from enterprise to mid-market, from manufacturing to retail to tech, we've seen these issues in their various permutations across all of these different companies. Well, then that's naturally going to give you this valuable experience to say, okay, what's that low-hanging fruit? What's something that I can tackle in the next 6 to 8 weeks and show value? And because something so critical in analytics is getting buy-in across the organization. And it's no longer the case that a CEO or a CMO buys enterprise software and sort of pushes it down the throats of everybody in the group. It's more that you need some buy-in. You need a desire to actually use these tools across the entire department and the entire company, right? So that's a really important element. And really being able to systematically address challenges, systematically improve your data and analytics, oftentimes that third set of eyes, that external expertise, is so critical in just saving time, saving resources, and accelerating the process. So that's one reason. One more thing I would add to that is around simply not having the necessary resources. So some companies, maybe they do actually have a decent idea of, okay, we really want to improve our enterprise performance management. We really want to work on our budgeting, our forecasting, our financial analysis. We know that's a quote unquote low hanging fruit. We know we can make something happen there, but we don't have a bunch of data scientists. We don't have data architects, Power BI or Tableau analysts. And in this competitive market, it's not quick or easy to hire those people. So another reason I would say that's very critical is just resource augmentation, being able to bring in scalable teams where you use them when you need them, and then you can turn them off like a faucet when you don't need them. And that's a really, really valuable aspect as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's a couple of things you said in there that I really liked and I think are important for business owners to be thinking about. The length of the examples that you talked about, you were talking about, you know, we're talking a few weeks, we're not talking years, right? And I think that's really important because business owners are rightly concerned about getting into engagements that could be 3, 4, 5 years or something that's that significant from a cost and an impact perspective. The work you do, it sounds like, is pretty rapid and gets results in short order. Is that a fair kind of assessment of what I've heard?
It is. Yeah. And it really comes down to our focus on agile principles, which of course is becoming very ubiquitous in this space, but it's also this focus on rapid prototyping and proof of concepts. And back to that idea of the low-hanging fruit, right? We'll pick a problem and we'll work our way down through those questions, as I discussed, to what key data sources we need to actually use and leverage to get some insights. And then we'll go ahead and take a subset of that data, begin running some analytics, and get something on a dashboard, a UI. Just show something. And that gets back to the idea of show, not tell. Because a lot of times analytics is a pretty esoteric concept for some people. It's hard to conjure up an image of your mind of what really is analytics. But in 4 weeks, if I can show you a dashboard that shows you exactly how you're projected to do next month, how different salespeople are performing versus others, and even giving you text-based insights that'll tell you what to do in plain English, that really sparks that aha moment in the minds of users to really push forward and evangelize analytics across the organization. So really getting that inertia started with proof of concepts, with rapid prototyping, it really just is that idea of success begets more success, and it really is that snowball effect.
Yeah, and it's pretty beautiful nowadays that you have tools like Tableau, Power BI, that are so easy to just kind of get set up on. You don't even need to have kind of a live connection to anything. You can just toss an Excel sheet in there and then just start slicing and dicing the data and see what it looks like. And within just a day, you can have a dashboard built out rather than, I think back in the days, that would probably take a lot longer. But it's, I guess, just technology continues to develop and makes kind of getting some of these insights out of the data a lot easier.
Yeah. So when you go into a company for an engagement, where do you typically start? What does that look like?
Good question. And it does depend, because at the end of the day, we're consultants and we want to help our clients in the best way we can, which means we need to understand what their needs are. So one commonality is that there's always some sort of a discovery, an immersion process, where we're understanding what are their key pain points, where are they today, and then work with them to figure out what's that ideal future state look like. Where am I having trouble making quick enough or intelligent enough decisions? What does that actually look like? And then crafting that roadmap to get from point A to point Z. So that is typically where we start. But there's other times where our clients are already along that journey. Maybe they're already using predictive analytics across their functions. But maybe, like I said before, they just don't have all of the resources they need internally. They need someone with the expertise that we bring to the table to best visualize that data. Perhaps they have some dashboards, but they're not custom. A lot of people go in and they see they're really kind of inundated with these graphs and charts and numbers. But again, you get that paralysis by analysis. It's like, well, what am I really looking at? There's a lot of mental gymnastics. So having the expertise of people who have done that, like our company has, we really get to the point where we can build personalized experiences where each consumer views the data just the way that they want to, according to their thought process. Because everybody thinks about making decisions differently, right? Some people are more people-centric, others are more number-centric, and that's completely natural. And we understand that, and we build tools that really do facilitate both of those styles.
That's great. So once you've actually gone in, and when you think about some of the engagements you've had, what are some outcomes that you see? What are some kind of successes that you've seen your companies be able to achieve as a result of improving their data and analytics capabilities?
Sure. So we see it at multiple levels, you know, more of that tactical decision, operational decision making up to the strategic level. And on that operational basis, we just see an incredible improvement in efficiencies. I mean, we talk about some of the manufacturing organizations we work with where previously they had no visibility into how to best allocate inventory, how their machines were performing on the shop floor. And there was no interconnected view. So within a couple months, all of a sudden, all of their executives were met with this full, complete view of their operations, how they're performing on a daily basis, how they're anticipated to perform next week, and then which decisions they should be making to actually meet those challenges. So really just the net result is a huge improvement in efficiency and speed to decision, where people are making decisions confident in the fact that they're backed by actual data and real numbers, and they're not just shoot from the hip style decision making. So that's been a huge success that really spans our clients, whether it be those manufacturing companies, transportation companies, or even retail.
Yeah, and even at the most kind of basic level, it's really cutting time, the time efficiency. You have so many companies. I was actually on a call with a company yesterday, and where the individual mentioned that 85% of their time is creating manual Excel reports. So they're getting Excel, or they're getting data out of some ERP system, some source system, tossing it into an Excel, running all these pivots, VLOOKUPs, and they're doing this on a weekly, monthly basis. And it's just, instead of actually analyzing or actually getting insights out of the data, they're creating the reports. When nowadays you have tools that automatically will do that, so then their time can be spent somewhere else. So I guess that time efficiency is kind of one of the biggest things that we do see is kind of an ROI.
Yeah, that especially, and at the strategic level, you know, I talk about decisions being cross-functional now. That's another huge thing is a CEO doesn't have to go to a bunch of committee meetings with each of their individual departments to piece together a puzzle of how are we doing, or are we making money, or should we introduce a new product? Now, when we have these cross-functional user interfaces, dashboards, you can call them, all of a sudden they're met with all that information they need to make those strategic decisions. And again, it's saving time, it's saving money, but it's also just making more intelligent decisions at the end of the day.
To that point, Chris, I remember a former colleague of mine once said, the only thing worse than no data is bad data, because bad data can lead to decisions that could be devastating to a business, right? And so, yeah, absolutely. Everything that you're saying makes so much sense. This has been terrific. So thank you so much, Chris and Alfonso. And really, when we think about why it was so important for us to talk to both of you, when we think about the business owners that Valenta talks to, we're really helping them with improving their processes, right? And process optimization and improving processes is just such a key building block. But I would argue data is equally a critical building block for a company to be successful. And without good processes or good data, it is really, really difficult, if not impossible, to run an effective company. So I think the kind of data and process conversations go hand in hand in many respects. Data and analytics, in fact, along with process, go hand in hand. So very much appreciate you taking the time. Final question for both of you. If someone is interested in learning more and wanting to talk to both of you about how Astral may be helpful to their company, what's the best way to reach out to you guys?
So a couple ways, but the best way is just to go to our website.
Yeah.
Just astralconsultinggroup.com, and that's A-S-T-R-A-L, consultinggroup.com. And we've got a whole bunch of good stuff there. We have insights about our latest thoughts, our thought leadership, what we're thinking about, the newest trends that are coming out in the industry. We have case studies to show some of those success stories in a lot more detail. And then we also detail all of our solutions and how they work. So that's a great place. We're also active on LinkedIn, and you can find us by searching The Astral Consulting Group on LinkedIn. And we post a bunch of good stuff there too.
Terrific. Terrific. Well, Chris, Alfonso, thank you so much. I learned a lot. Really helpful conversation today, and look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thank you.